Welcome to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us with Brandon Handley. Because you're already great at everything else, why not fatherhood too?
Hey there, and welcome to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. This is Brandon Handley. I am the creator and founder of Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I want to say thank you for choosing to spend your time with me today on Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I also want to just encourage you, if you could, to go over to the podcast on iTunes, download it, subscribe to it, and leave a review if you have found any part of this at all to have an impact on your life. That will help others to find the show and listen to it and get the same type of enjoyment that you are out of it. Also, if you are a father, and if you're looking for a place that you can go celebrate fatherhood, or perhaps even share some struggles and get some advice or find some like-minded men, I strongly encourage you to come on over to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us, the private Facebook group, and ask to join. I'll let you right in. That's going to do it for right now, guys, and please stay tuned for today's podcast. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey there, Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I am on today with Charlie King, and Charlie King gave me the briefest bio, but I think it does us justice. He is a speaker, coach, and leader. He unleashes men to be the father their kids deserve and the man they've always wanted to be. Charlie is the founder of Heroic Fatherhood. Thank you for being here today, Charlie. How are you doing?
It's my pleasure. I'm super psyched to be here, for sure, Brandon. I try and keep my bio on the down low. I keep it small because I don't want people to look too close.
Right on, right on. I love it. What is something we can help you celebrate today, Charlie?
Wow, that's awesome. That's a great question. I would love to celebrate spending an entire week traveling with my daughter last week, looking at colleges, which is an amazing microcosm of relationships and psychology and experience and rife with lots of emotions and lots of yearnings and wishings and everything else. And it was the whole gambit of both exciting and frustrating and stressful, but rewarding at the same time. And I think we navigated it pretty well together.
That is awesome. Definitely we can help you celebrate that. What were some of the exciting parts and what were some of the frustrating parts?
Some of the exciting parts were looking where my daughter lit up around at different schools, and she lit up about different things. What I noticed was that she evolved. Like, I always talk about this thing called evolving in real time. Like, we're human beings, and when we get older, we start to think that we're kind of the same that we've always been. And that's true if we say that that's true. But I'd like to think that where a powerful life is lived is when we allow ourselves to evolve in real time. And I noticed that with my daughter, as we were visiting all these schools, her picture about like what she really wanted or what really worked for her evolved while we were on the tour, where she thought she really wanted a small school. All of a sudden, that wasn't so much as an important issue going forward. And where she all of a sudden she opened up to a much bigger school, which is one of her favorite schools. And where she thought, well, you know, I've been a rower for 4 years. I don't know if I want to make that a big part of my life in college. After we got done with half a dozen schools, it was so clear how important rowing is for her and how much she's would really like to be part of a powerful program. So like there's this like watching it all evolve. And one of the things I want to celebrate for myself was staying out of the way. Staying out of the way. This has actually been a theme that's come up recently. We had a number of different things coming down, including we had a lockdown at our local high school yesterday. And one of the conversations that came out of it, which was sometimes the most powerful thing we can do is stay out of the way. And it's counterintuitive for men and especially for dads. But not letting my experience, for instance, on this college tour, not letting my experience of college get in the way, not letting my experience of what might work for me get in the way of helping her identify what would work for her.
Cool. So you just kind of let her choose her own identity and navigate it as she would. That's cool. Getting to watch your daughter evolve right in front of you. That's very cool. So what were some of the frustrating parts?
Frustrating parts were most, well, I would have to say the frustrating parts were, I'm wired to look for opportunity. I look for opportunity wherever I go. And when I go on a college tour, it's an opportunity to learn, to see, to hear, to keep my eyes and my ears and my mouth open and learn as much as I possibly can. And it helps me sort of understand my surroundings. And I have this assumption that other people are like that. And I think where I got most frustrated was when we ran into organizations, whether it was hotels we stayed in or schools, who have this opportunity when somebody travels 3,000 miles to come and visit their school and reached out beforehand to meet with coaches, meet with academic advisors, meet with admissions advisors. And the schools either don't respond at all, or they respond with, "We don't have time for you. There's nobody available to talk to you." Yeah. And honestly, that speaks volumes about the school's perspective. So it's actually a gift, but I also found it frustrating, right? Like, hey, if it's a school that's not going to make time for you, you know, you're a lead rower in a varsity team, and you have a major that they say they specialize in, and we want to meet with somebody in each of those departments, and you aren't willing to make time for any of that, it kind of speaks about how important the students are to you, or how important prospective students are to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely going to go ahead and talk to just how the future of any relationship there could be.
So, man, you're a fatherhood coach, and how did we get into that business? How did you jump into fatherhood coaching, working with dads and men?
Well, this is this thing that happened about 17 years ago. I had some kids. So the fatherhood thing kind of just happened.
As it often will.
As it often does. Sometimes it's predicted. Sometimes it's kind of a like exciting surprise. Look, it's a surprise. So fatherhood's happening, and it's been happening for a long time. And I realized early in being a dad that I had no idea what I was doing. Which I think most dads feel. But one of the things I was super clear about was that the way that I was parented and the way that my father interacted with me when I was young was not something I wanted to model for my kids. And it was, my father was just mirroring what he had been taught from his father and from his father before him. And for as much as it may have worked for him, it didn't work for me. And so I realized, well, I want to choose something different, but in light of that, I have no idea what I'm doing and I have no idea where to look. And you know, the last 17 years has been a microscope of self-reflection and personal growth and distinguishing what's most important, what I value the most. You know, like, what is my credo? Where do I stand in the world? Who do I want to be for my kids? What stories are my kids going to tell their kids about who I was for them? Right? What are they going to tell? And I've been a coach now for about 7 years, but only in the last couple of years have I really shifted to fatherhood. And it's really about helping dads distinguish who they want to be as a father and what kind of legacy they want to leave behind, and that they actually have some say over it. They don't have to continue to be the person they've always been as a parent or a spouse or a father or in relationship or not in relationship. They can be someone else.
And that's awesome. I think that, you know, I am in a similar process of being that someone else. And there's a lot of people out there that may be resistant to that. What do you tell, you and I have had conversations before too, where I know that you get a group of men together, was it once a month, where you do your community ping pong ball?
Yeah, we do. Right? We do community ping. I do a dad's ping pong night once a month in our community.
Right, and I love that. What are some of the responses that you have from other dads that are there when you talk about what it is that you do?
Well, I usually don't talk all that much about what I do unless I'm asked about it.
Sure.
You'd ask the question, you know, what about guys who are resistant to it?
Yeah.
Who are resistant to it. I don't know what to say about that. There's some guys who are like, yeah, that's not my thing. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Have you ever, have you had helped somebody switch the switch on?
Well, usually what happens is a conversation starts where someone is sharing about how, what's so for them in their life, and they identify that there's some sort of gap for them.
Okay.
Right. And it may show up like a problem or a struggle or a suffering or something goes on, but I like to think of it as like a gap between where they are right now and where they'd like to be. And that's the juicy piece for me, right? Because very often as guys, we don't talk about our problems. We don't talk about what we're scared about. We don't talk about, you know, because we see each other as competitors. Like we're wired to see other men as competitors. And being open and even, dare I say it, vulnerable, sometimes being vulnerable is really hard. But when somebody's willing to say that thing, like here I am over here and it's not working for me, that's where it gets really juicy because, you know, where I'm get super excited is, well, okay, I totally get that that's where you are. And I'm so sorry that's where you are. What would it look like if it didn't have to be that way?
Right.
What would it look like if you got to say how it was going to be? And that's where we get a super juicy conversation, where we get into a creative process. Hey, look at that. I didn't manage that at all, did I? Thank goodness we're just recording, right?
Man, my you're in good shape.
Right, so I can pick that up. Give me a sec.
Go ahead.
Notifications off. So that's where that gets to that juicy piece, right? Like that juicy piece where we can get into this creative process is like this like imagine like this whiteboard that's as big as the screen behind me, where we get to go, okay, let's set aside for a moment everything and how it's gone to date. Let's set that aside just for this moment and let's fill this board with how you'd like it to be. What would it look like if you got to say how it is, like how you'd like it to be? What would you like the future to look like? If we were standing together, cracking a beer or getting a soda a year from now, and you call and we're like there and you're like, I can't believe where my life is. I have no idea it could be like this. What would that life look like? What would it include? What would there be more of? What would there be less of?
Absolutely. And that is powerful. When you've got somebody who's willing to work through that with you, having gone through the process a couple times now, definitely find that to be powerful. Were you ever coached and you experienced that and you're like, that's why I want to do this?
Oh, was I ever coached? I've been coached for years. I'm consistently being coached, whether it's I'm in a program or I have a one-on-one coach that I work with. I think that evolution comes in conversation and relationship. It doesn't come cognitively thinking about stuff. I think that it lives in conversation, it lives in outside perspectives, and it lives dramatically in action that we take.
What are some other actions that you get to take being a coach and kind of being like this dad role model? What are some other actions you've taken?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that question. My days are full of action. You know, one of the tenets of the work that I support men with is moving from moving to a bias for action, moving to a bias of getting outside of our heads, getting outside of looking for ways to better understand ourselves and get into action where we can make a difference, where we can start shifting the way we see the world and the things that show up around us.
I love that. We spoke about some of the stuff that you got involved in, and that was like the auction for the school. You want to tell that story a little bit? Because I think that's a really cool story to tell, and I was personally inspired by it, and it might inspire some others.
Yeah, what for so for years my kids went to a small private grade school, a middle school, and it was almost all volunteer based, where you get where you have a very small school and a small staff, and pretty much everything else is done by parent volunteers. And as a committed father, that was one of my commitments, was to be involved in their school and involved in their schooling. And where I found that I could really make a difference is physically doing things, right? Like I'm big enough, I'm strong enough, I'm healthy enough, I've got a head on my shoulders. So whether it was everything from digging a ditch to coordinating, getting an electrician to come in and fix things, I just started taking that on. And I started taking on greater roles within the school to maintain the school. And then part of that evolved into, I was like, well, I seem to be doing this and there are mostly women who are volunteering. And then there's me and there are a couple of other guys. And I said, I think I'd like to get some other guys involved in this. And so I started enrolling dads in helping out. And we started, we gave ourselves a name. We called ourselves the Dusty Gnomes, which has got a reference that's not important for this conversation. And we started doing all the service work around the school. So we do maintenance projects, we do service projects. We'd also do social nights where we go out for beers, we play poker, we go into the city and go see a show. So it actually got a life of its own, which is pretty exciting. And one year we were approached, we had, the biggest fundraiser of the school year, the biggest fundraiser of the school year is the school auction. It's where we raised a vast majority of the non-tuition based money, which our school absolutely needed. And one year the auction chair approached me and said, you've got this group of 30 guys who on a regular basis show up and do volunteer work around the school. Is there any chance you could see some way to make that happen as an auction item? And so what we came up with was this really cool thing. You could buy the Dusty Gnomes for a day. And what we would do is we would guarantee, we choose these dates beforehand, sort of three Saturdays in a given month. And we would guarantee that a number of men would show up and they would work an 8-hour day at your house. So imagine if you will, and I think our average was we guarantee 12 men would show up at your house. So imagine that you have 12 guys who all show up in their cars, in their pickup trucks, in their van, minivans or whatever. They bring whatever tools they have. And you get all 12 of these guys to work an entire 8-hour day at your house. That is an incredible, what we discovered was there was an incredible amount. We could actually transform somebody's home. We would take on any job that didn't require a permit. And we had people from so many different skill levels in this group. In this group, we had people who were builders, we had people who were architects, we had people who were handymen, we had people who were electricians, but even, the guys who had no, skill set as it were, they had gloves, they knew how to use a shovel, and sometimes that was enough. And it was more than enough. Like we would take the more the merrier. And we discovered a couple of things. First of all, we could transform people's lives. We could transform their homes where they were, I'm in total breakdown about how this is going. And, I want you to clean up my yard or build me an outbuilding or we did so many things, chop down trees. We had so many opportunities in front of us. And that's what we jump into. We jump into these big projects and we could transform homes in a day. And it was hard work. It was always manual labor. And at the end of it, the 12 guys, and we'd always get together and the 12 guys would go out and get some beers afterwards and laugh about all the work that we'd done. And we'd go home and we'd all absolutely collapse. Now, the upshot was, is not only was it successful, but it became the most sought after auction item at the school. And it also became the single biggest fundraiser at the school as well. And like I said, we guaranteed 12, but there literally was one day where we put it out to the list. We made sure at least 12 people were going to show. There's one day that we actually had 20 guys show up to somebody's house. And to see the look on this single mom's face, to see like she, paid, a not small amount of money, but got 20 men to show up to her house and really like gang work her entire property and transform her entire home in a day. And it was more than one family who, just ended up in tears at the end of it, where they were in breakdown about how things were going. They didn't know what they were going to do. They took a chance on this and we were able to actually transform lives.
love the story, Charlie. I loved it when you first told it, and I love it again. I love it again just because of that's talks to the action, I think, that you're talking about, taking that action bias, getting out there and participating in the community. And I think that it also talks to just how you can get people motivated, you know, a couple people at a time to grow a group to actually go accomplish some big things. So awesome. I really do enjoy that. Where do you think, Charlie, that you would be if you, you know, weren't a dad? Where were you before you became a father? And, you know, where would you have gone without being a dad?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that I ever thought of it that way. I think it likely that I would still be in the fire department. So I was a former firefighter paramedic, and that's what I was doing when we got pregnant. And I'd found some success in that career. And I would probably be doing something in emergency services at this point in my career.
Okay.
That being said, that was also 17 years ago. So who knows?
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you think it's shaped you since then?
Fatherhood.
That's right.
I think I'm a different person today than I was 17 years ago. I think it's made me so much more patient and empathetic. It's forced me to come to terms with a whole lot of my own stuff so that I'm not projecting it onto another generation, right? Like, you know, if we are nothing if not mirrors for the way that we were raised. And if we get to choose how we want to be in this world, if we get to choose how we want to interact, if we get to choose how people see us, then that's something I'm really interested in. And like I said, it, like, without having kids, I may not have been willing to go through the work that I've done in the last 17 years to get here. So I'm just exceedingly grateful for all the opportunities that have come out from it all.
From being a father. Now, you said a little bit earlier, talking about how your father wasn't really the model, or that wasn't really who you wanted to mirror. What was your relationship like with your father, and what were, you know, some of the traits that you wanted to leave behind, and what were some of the things that you you kept from your father?
You know, the one thing that I want to acknowledge is that we all do the best we can with what we were left. We all do the best we can with what we were left, and some are left with more, and some are left with less. And there are some who are left with more who don't do anything with it, and there's some who are left with less who do much more with it. And my father and I had a distant relationship. He was raised in an era where, you know, that old phrase, children are to be seen and not heard, and where he had a much more formal relationship with me, where I felt much more at arm's length. And what was so for me was that, I was pretty sure that being an adult must be easy because my parents didn't talk about their personal lives. They managed us and, scooted us off when they were done doing whatever they were doing. And so I was pretty sure everything was going to be, you know, like, it must be fine because they don't talk about their lives at all. And I didn't feel all that well connected to my dad. And it was only later that, you know, when I became older and a little more aware of what was so for me, and I became more aware as a human being, and I got to know my dad a little bit more, was to really understand that how much he struggled with depression, which had been a generational experience. Like, it had been going on for a number of different generations. And that alcoholism was a big part of our family legacy as well, with some pretty significant impacts. And we certainly did get closer as we got older, and yet he was a very private person. And I really think that his privacy was around protecting us from being impacted by his depression. Right. Like, so he wanted to protect us to make sure that we weren't negatively impacted by his depression.
He wasn't trying to drag you down with him. And that's gotta be a tough one. I had a conversation last night actually with somebody who faces it. And I asked him that question. I said, you know, how do you try and keep your depression separate from your family? And so I imagine that must have been tough for him. So, you know, what would you say some of the good things were that you took out of the relationship, your family did with you that you do now with your family?
Well, you know, there's this way of being that I inherited from my father. That's this innate capacity for connection and the importance of it. He could connect with anybody anywhere, and he was curious, and he was tenacious about it. And he could connect with anybody from the guy who's sweeping the floors inside the mall to the CEO of a large company. He could connect with anybody, and that was something that I learned from him and I inherited from him. There are some really amazing holiday oriented traditions that we had, but you know, frankly, the way that we parent, my wife and I, the way we choose to parent is dramatically different than the way that I was raised. We've really taken intentional parenting on. And I know that can be a little bit of a buzzword that makes people think, oh, that sounds so damn serious all the time. But we're just pretty intentional about what we choose. And there are things that are important to us that weren't important, you know, in my family as I was growing up. We're advocates for connection, communication, interaction. We sit around dinner tables. We're constantly interacting with our kids. We participate with them with whatever they're participating in. We don't just send them off to sports or other activities. We somehow figure out how to volunteer or be part of that. And so that's kind of a lot of fun.
What about, like, you know, being so intentional? Have you been able to teach your children? You've got the older daughter and teenagers right now. Is all this intentionality showing up, you feel? Do you see them as being intentional as well?
I do. I think the core of it comes from a lot of different things. I think it's a reflection of the community that we've chosen to live in. I think it's a reflection of the friends that we choose to surround ourselves with. I think it's a reflection of the school that we chose for them. And then I think to some extent that it's the who we've been around it. And at the end of the day, I mentioned earlier that we had a lockdown at my daughter's high school, which is an unfortunate part of modern life. Now, it was resolved within an hour, and no significant activity was perpetrated on the school. So just to put people at ease around that. But one of the things I was reflecting, I did a Facebook Live during it to sort of talk about my experience of it. One of the things is that I can't control how things are going to go, right? Like, I'm 20-minute drive away from the high school. There's a lot of law enforcement involved around the high school. Their number one rule is do not come to the high school right now. We're trying to figure out what's going on and make things safe. So there's nothing for me to do. So in the space that there's nothing for me to do, the one thing I can control, I can't control the circumstances about life, but one of the things I can control is how I interact with it and what I decide I think is true about it. And that's what our kids are going to see, is if we come from a place of fear, if we come from a place of feeling out of control, that's going to be what they feel too, because they look to us to figure out how to deal with difficult, stressful situations. And if then it's incumbent on me, it only serves my kids, it only serves me to have a lasso around how I am in the world and how I deal with stressful situations.
Right, right. So you're modeling for your children.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Every day.
And is this something that's kind of big for you and your dad coaching?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a big piece of my one-on-one coaching that I do with dads. It's going to be a big piece for the upcoming program that I have. I'm going to have a program that's going to roll out here in a couple of months. It's not really clear if it's an 8 or a 10 week program, but it's going to be an online program for dads. It's kind of got like this forging fatherhood title to it that I'm working on. And that may be just a working title for now, but yeah, it's like, you know, really deciding who you want to be in the world. Like, how do you want to show up? And then how do we line up behind that? Once we've decided who we want to be, how do we line up behind that? How do we do it every day? How do we wake up and go, this is who I'm going to be today, regardless of what my spouse says, regardless of what comes home from school, regardless of what my boss says, regardless of what the newest political tirade is, regardless of any of that, how do I forge myself? How do I hammer the steel or the metal that's gonna make me strong and resilient in the face of unknown circumstances and an unknown future, which is what we live with every day.
Absolutely. No, I love that. I love that. Just talking about, I think, choosing to be who you want to be, especially now as a father, how long did it take you, or, you know, when did you kind of realize you could make that choice? You didn't have to act the way that everything outside of you was. When did you, you know, kind of come across that?
Mm.
Hey there, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I am very excited that I have the opportunity to put this podcast out for you. I am not only able to put this podcast out for you, but I also run a Facebook group that, if you're not a member of that, head on over to Facebook and look for Fatherhood for the Rest of Us, ask for entry, and I will grant that entry, no problem. I also do quite a few lives over on Facebook. If you haven't caught those, they are pretty much the same or similar to the daily BJJ reports I often put here. You have the opportunity to see those in video, though, if you would like. Also, if you are looking for a coach, or if you're looking to work one-on-one or take this fatherhood mindset a little bit deeper, reach out to me. Let's have that conversation. Head on over to fatherhoodfortherestofus.com/coaching and let's have that conversation. Back to the program.
It actually was in my teen years. It was in my teen years. I took a program that you would have to be as old as I am to even have a memory of. It was a program that was called the S Training. And it really was a program for transformation. And it was super early. It was started back in the 70s. And it was a total whim that I got into it. And it absolutely gave me early access to a place where I could shift and decide how I saw the world and who I wanted to be. And it really took my foot off the brake on life. It
That's
really took the foot off the brake of life.
Is that program still available today?
That program is no longer available. It's morphed into a number of different things. It's now an organization called Landmark Education. And the program itself, their core program has changed pretty dramatically. But it still exists. I haven't been involved with them in decades.
Right. No, I just think it's interesting that you noticed that at such an early age, and you've embraced it, right? Because I think that a lot of us, I mean, myself included, you know, we kind of go through and we just feel like this is the way we've got to be. This is where we're supposed to show up. This is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And while we know that we can make choices, we're not making the choices like inherently, right? We're making like these external choices more so than these internal choices. Where is this gonna, how am I gonna feel if I go do this versus I'm gonna go do this for a buck type of thing. So being driven by different ways.
Well, that makes me curious, like what rules did you learn? Like what were some of the tenets or some of the rules that you learned as a boy growing up in your household?
I was pretty liberated. I mean, I didn't have a bunch of rules. I didn't have a father figure. And my mom was like, you know, a single mom. I lived with my grandparents. So there weren't a whole lot of, it was just like, don't get in trouble. Those were my tenets, you know, Charlie. And, you know, there were certain guidelines of like, you know, just be respectful, but nothing to what I'm hearing in you, right? Nothing to like being able to recognize or setting a time to say, you know, here's, you know, a way to live life, right? Versus, you know, just go get a job and keep working and you know, don't get into too much trouble and you know, don't get anybody pregnant. I think we're some of the right rules.
So not for you, not a ton of structure, right? And a fair amount of go out, live life.
Yeah.
Be as you will.
Yeah, and look, man, I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's just and everybody finds their way sooner or later. It's just that you know, it what's funny for my wife and I is that, you know, she comes from ultra structure, I come from none, and here we are, we're trying to figure it out with, you know, our own parenting. We want to make sure that there's some but not too much, right? A guiding hand but not a directing hand, I guess.
Yeah. It sounds like that. There's like this inherent tension. Like if you have imagine a rubber band between my hands, you have an inherent tension.
Yeah, man.
And that's really consistent amongst couples, that one comes from more structure and one from less. And, you know, and, you know, some days you're going to lean way this way and some days you're going to lean way that way, depending on where you're at. So who are some of the men that you interacted with in the world who helped you figure out what it meant to be you and what it meant to be a man and a dad?
You know, so I think that my grandfather was one, you know, he passed away many years ago, but, you know, just seeing him and his reactions with his family, especially as an older man, always reflect on him and what he brought. He was just a kind man, but, you know, stern enough. But he also allowed for you know, conversation. I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, allowed for conversation, nothing was like beyond reproach. He had a conversation and that was it, right? And it wasn't like that's a dumb idea, a stupid idea, or anything. It's just like allowed you to express yourself, and that was always really cool. Always supportive of, like, you know, going to do like extracurricular sports and activities, but never wanted to tell you that you had to go do it. And then, you know, to be honest with you, like, I think my best friend, who's, you know, not currently accessible right now, but growing up, he was born a day before me, and we met, and I experienced a lot of just kind of how he was, and we grew up together, but he was always a little bit more adult than I was, because he had, you know, he had a family at a younger age, and so kind of watching him and how he interacted and what he did for his family was a good model for me. You know, he was always active with integrity, always did what he said he was going to do, a lot of these things. And so really, not too many others, Charlie. And it's been kind of like, you know, make it up as you go along and pay attention for feedback.
Yeah. Well, it's a journey, right? Like nobody ever arrives. We don't ever arrive.
Well, I'll talk to that for a second too. This is what struck me in our conversation. I felt like I'd covered some decent ground before you and I got together in person at Dad 2.0 down in New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. And I left there. I was like, man, I've just gotten my first footstep forward, you know, because we had a really good in-depth conversation, guys. I will promote Charlie and just say that, you know, if you are looking, even though I have. An offer out there for fatherhood coaching, I would also recommend, if you don't latch on to what I'm saying or dig my vibe or any of that stuff, if it's not me and you're still looking for somebody, I'd recommend you talk to Charlie, because it was a powerful conversation. And
And it uncovered a lot, and it just helped me to, you know, seek out more. And I think that that's what coaching just really helps you to step outside of yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny. So first of all, thanks for that. That's super sweet. You know, I really enjoyed the conversation that we had as well. And the thing is like, all we're doing is pulling back another layer of the onion. All we're doing in life is pulling back another layer of the onion, and nobody ever arrives. Nobody ever arrives. That includes, you know, Oprah and Deepak Chopra and the Dalai Lama and name your spirit and the, you know, and the Pope Francis and like name your spiritual leader. Nobody ever arrives. They all still struggle to a certain extent. You know, Brené Brown famously says we're wired for struggle, which I absolutely believe. I absolutely believe that. We can't do this growth alone. We cannot do this growth alone. So whether you end up, you know, end up in a group, you know, doing a, you know, whether you end up in therapy or you end up in a support program, or if you take an online program or you take extension classes at a college or you hire a coach, all of those are different avenues for opening up new doors. It's not enough to just listen to podcasts. It's not enough to just watch TED Talks. It's not enough to read inspiring articles, because those bring in information, but they don't shift anything. Where we shift is in conversation, where we shift is in relationship, and where we shift is taking actions on what we learned. And a vast, vast, vast majority, and I'm really not talking, everybody who thinks they're the 2%, you're not, you're the 98%, just like the rest of us. We read all that stuff and we're like, I'm gonna institute that in my life. And guess what? We don't. Or it lasts for a week and then the article's gone and we don't have anybody holding us accountable. And we don't know anybody else, right? Like, I don't know anybody else who does what I do, who lives locally. So I need to have relationships. I need to have someone holding me accountable outside of my personal physical community that's keeping me on my toes. Right. I need to keep pulling back layers of the onion, because we will regress. We will regress in a heartbeat when we stop leaning in and leaning into our lives.
Yeah, default mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to default. Yeah. Well, you brought up a couple books, or you brought up, like, you know, talking about reading, and while it's not enough, do you have a couple of favorites that you'd recommend to anybody?
Sure. No More Mr. Nice Guy. Great book. I recommend it to almost every one of my clients. It really shifts us from that perspective of you know, the default husband and spouse of managing expectations and taking care of the needs of others, to really standing powerfully to take care of our needs first. Because, you know, when you sit down on an airplane, the first thing they tell you is, if you're traveling with a child and the masks come down, you must put your mask on yourself first. Because if you're not taking care of you, you can't take care of them. The same is true in personal work. If you're not taking care of your needs first, then you can't take care of anybody else. And it impacts your children's experience of you, your spouse's experience of you, the expectations your kids are going to have about what it means to be a father, what it means to be a man, what it means to get older, what it means to interact, or all those things. So No More Mr. Nice Guy is another one. The other one I really like is The Big Leap, which is a great book. And it's about getting through your ceilings, where you get stopped. You know, you find success to a certain layer and then you get stopped, and what it takes to start breaking through those and getting on to the what's next.
Man, I have not heard of The Big Leap, so looking forward to that one. You talk a little bit about the self-care. I know you know, you're very athletic, you're into keto, however you want to say it. Were you always deeply involved with your own self-care, or was that something that came with time as you got older?
It's kind of evolved. It's really kind of evolved. The way I took care of myself previously didn't serve me the way that I was hoping. I find that I have different needs the older I get, and the more layers of onions I peel off. I need, you know, more, I need more reflection time. I need finding more time for quiet and space. But I still need that high energy interaction as well. And exercise is paramount for me. And eating a healthy diet really serves me as well. It serves not only the way I want to feel and the way I want to look, but it also serves my energy, because I just feel so much stronger and I feel so much healthier. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that my kids will get to see moving forward for themselves. So, you know, while I still enjoy French fries from time to time, it's not a regular thing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What is something that you think you will thank your children for? Say 10 years goes by, what are you going to be thanking them for?
I think I will be thanking them for letting me into their lives, right? Like, I don't know how it's going to go 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but what I can speak for today, and I sent my kids off this morning. I'm working from home today, and my kids went to school with my wife this morning. I've got teenagers, and watching them banter back and forth and kind of nudge each other and laugh and make fun of each other and make fun of me and make fun of my wife, and just being in this really powerful relationship with them where they're willing to let themselves be seen with me and my wife. And they didn't have to do that. And there are lots of kids that don't do that with their families, and that my kids do, whether they choose to or that's just something they've learned, I'm super grateful for. And I would absolutely thank them for that in 10 years.
You know, they don't have to hang out with us, right? It's funny, you know, I find that, you know, my children, they keep their distance every once in a while too. And when they distance themselves, you're like, man, well, I thought we were cool. What happened? That's definitely a good one. Is there anything that you would like to bring up in the conversation that we haven't kind of hit on?
Yeah, I think what I want, you know, we have these talks in our community that are a little bit like a TEDx talk. They're every quarter or so, and I was invited to speak at this most recent one. And at the end of the talk, they do a wide open Q&A, which makes it very different from a TEDx talk. It's a community based, there are 100 people in the room, and it is just a back and forth with all the speakers. And what I was struck by was one person in the audience asked me, so, you know, you do all this stuff, you've got all this stuff going on for fatherhood, you've told your origin story, which was what I was telling, like, what gets you moving every day? Like, what keeps you going? And I said, you know what does? Is the rate of isolation and depression in men in our country. Epidemic. It's epidemic. And studies are showing over and over again that men, as they get older, tend to isolate more, tend to let go of local relationships that they have, personal relationships. They tend to spend less time with friends, and they tend to rely on their spouse, if you're married, for their social connections than their own. And what it ends up doing is that men become busier, and that they tend to stay by themselves and not grow in their relationships. And it has a direct reflection on the rates of depression for men, the anti-anxiety and anti-depression medications that are prescribed, and the rate of suicide. 7 out of 10 suicides in this country are by men. The majority of them are coming from older men. And when we try it, we usually succeed because we're not playing around. And it is a direct reflection of isolation. It is a direct reflection of men feeling not connected to other men. So this is what gets me up every morning. If I can have a conversation, if I can lead a group, if I can have the opportunity to have men in my space, or young men or old men in my space, and feel like we're connected and make a difference for them, that's more than enough to get me up and get me going in the morning.
That's definitely a powerful motivator, Charlie. Thank you. Are those statistics available online somewhere? Where are you getting your statistics from?
I'm getting that. It was very funny that you asked that. The statistics are available online from the CDC, from the Centers for Disease Control, who tracks a lot of statistics about depression, suicidal ideation. Very often I'm looking not only at the statistics, which are the sad side about it, but also what shifts that? Like, how do men interact with each other? And here's, I was just reading an article this morning out of the UK about that it actually, like, it was startling what the recommendation is around men and staying connected, and that men stay connected physically with each other, and that to maintain strong relationships, they need to be out with other men. They need to be out with other men physically twice a week to maintain close relationships with other men. Hmm. And so in the UK, they're like, we think men should go out with other mates and go to the pub twice a week. And that's what it takes to keep men feeling connected to other men and feel in relationship and manage stress and all the things that go along with being a father and being a man.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's go. I'll meet you in 3 days.
Start hitchhiking. Get that thumb out.
This is one of my only good limbs left. Do you get that yourself? And this is outside of work though, right? This is outside of work. Or does this take work into consideration? Those relationships.
I the studies that I've read, or what I've gleaned from the studies I've read, is that this is outside of work. This isn't just this isn't your work buddies. Mm-hmm. This is people you're connected to where you can talk about things that are stressing you about work, among other things, and where you can talk about those things that you may not talk about with a coworker. Yeah. And finding those relationships and creating them where you live, and you know, makes it super hard if you've moved to a new community. And where studies show that women have this capacity to have this super intimate relationship over the phone or even in texting, and that they can feel like their needs are really getting met, men don't. They tend to socialize more online, but it does not feed that need for connection. And where that need for connection really lives inside of being physically present with other men.
Yeah. Hey, look, I'll buy that for sure. I know that I've recently started doing the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and if I don't go at least twice a week, I can feel the difference in my week. So yeah, hook, line, and sinker. I'm sold. Where can I send people to find the King, Charlie King?
Well, you can find us in two different places. You can find us at heroicfatherhood.com, where I suggest that you subscribe to the blog posts, because that's also how we communicate about upcoming programs and opportunities in your community if and when I'm traveling. The other place you can find out more is at facebook.com/heroicfatherhood. I do Facebook Lives over there. I do interviews with other dads making a difference. As a matter of fact, yourself was on Dad's Making a Difference in the last round. And it's a place where I connect and communicate with folks who have like mindset.
Awesome. I love it, Charlie. I love what you're doing. Keep doing it. And thank you for being on Fatherhood for the Rest of Us Day.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me, Brandon.